Right now, it's time for another edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton went at it again last night. The two of them, along with five other Democratic presidential hopefuls, made their way to Chicago's Soldier Field to debate. No touchdowns, but there were a couple of hard hits. Republicans argued over who said what on abortion and taxes in their debate over the weekend, and three Republicans are likely no-shows for Saturday's straw poll in Iowa. More on that in just a couple of minutes. If you watched any of this week's debates or not, call in with your questions about the candidates, their position, who's in and who's out, or any of the rest of the week's political news, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. As always, you can send us your comments on the blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin is out today. NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving is our guest junkie for the day. Thanks for pinch hitting.
I will do my best to fill these extraordinarily large shoes.
He left his shoes behind. On his way to Yankee Stadium, no doubt. Let's start with that debate last night in Chicago. The first thing you had to notice was how different this looked than any other debate you've ever seen.
Number one, they were outdoors. They were outdoors in the end zone of a famous football stadium, Soldier Field. They were in a bit of a wind. It had been extremely hot in Chicago yesterday. And if you've been in a Chicago August when we're creeping up towards 100 degrees, you know how that can be. This was also a debate attended by 15,000 extremely enthusiastic, even raucous, union activists, part of the AFL-CIO, and they were there to be heard. They were not just there to listen. And so this had a much more, shall we say, rough and tumble, close to the people out there really shouting against the other candidates feel than any of the debates we've had up to now in either party.
Well, let's listen to a brief excerpt. This is Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York. This is going on the attack against her principal rival, as it's seen at least at this point in the Democratic field, Senator Barack Obama of Illinois, and about his proposal in the past couple of weeks that he might go into Pakistan with firm information if he knew Osama bin Laden was there without asking President Musharraf of Pakistan for any permission.
But I think it is a very big mistake to telegraph that and to destabilize the Musharraf regime, which is fighting for its life against the Islamic extremists who are in bed with al-Qaeda and Taliban. And remember, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. The last thing we want is to have al-Qaeda-like followers in charge of Pakistan and having access to nuclear weapons. So you can think big, but remember, you shouldn't always say everything you think if you're running for president, because it have consequences across the world, and we don't need that right now.
Senator Clinton playing, I guess she hoped, on the inexperience problem that some people say Mr. Obama may have.
He has taken a lot of flack, both from politicians, people running against him for the presidential nomination, and from an awful lot of editorialists and other people commenting on the situation, for sounding as though he was just maybe trying to sound a little tough, and in the meantime, perhaps putting his foot down in a situation of much greater complexity than he perhaps realizes. On the other hand, let's stop and look at what he actually said. Did he say we should go into Pakistan's tribal areas without asking, or did he say we should go in even if we ask and we don't have their say-so and permission? If that's the only way we can get the top leaders of al-Qaeda, is it perhaps the course the United States has to take if we're ever going to get Osama bin Laden? And in the days after he said that, both Hillary Clinton and President George Bush said much the same thing.
And he said further in the debate last night that we should be talking about these things with the American people, and this is how he responded to Senator Clinton.
The fact of the matter is that when we don't talk to the American people, we're debating the most important foreign policy issues that we face. And the American people have a right to know. It is not just Washington insiders that are part of the debate that has to take place with respect to how we're going to shift our foreign policy. This is a...
You Washington insider, you Senator Clinton.
Indeed. And the fact that he is a sitting United States senator, of course, doesn't necessarily make him one, too, at least not if he's being pilloried for being naive and sounding as though he doesn't know the rules.
And in the meantime, of course, the other people who are busy besides the people in the campaigns themselves are the pollsters, who are out with new numbers in the Democratic side to seem to show Hillary Clinton expanding her lead.
The story of 2007 on the Democratic side has been that Hillary Clinton has never been in any sense endowed as the front runner. No one has come even close to questioning that status in the polls. She is not the number one fundraiser. That's Obama. But in the polls, she has, if anything, grown stronger. She's widened her base. She's increased her lead. There's a USA Today Gallup poll out that shows her almost 2-1 over Obama. That's starting to look a little bit insuperable. Not just daunting, but really dominant to the degree that Obama is fading as she strengthens. And if we are really going to start having these voting events in just perhaps 4 months, Neil, just 4 months from now, that lead is going to be awfully tough for him to overcome.
And let's see if we get some callers on the line again. If you'd like to join me and Ron Elving in our regular Political Junkie segment, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Leo's on the line with us from Chicago.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about the issue of election reform. I remember a while back, Senator Clinton was sort of outspoken about the importance of reforming the presidential election process. And just recently on Science Friday, there was a piece about the voting machines and the possibility of tampering with them. So, but I noticed that there's been a sort of a lack of this issue in the public debate as of recently. And I just wanted to see whether there's a chance of this issue kind of getting any sort of serious political traction before the 2008 election, and I'll take my response off the air.
Just to clarify, this is about the integrity of elections, and then how much trust we can have in the numbers that are put out by the polls.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure we knew what you're talking about, Ron Elving.
On election day, the actual voting machine mechanics, and in fact, on All Things Considered last night, we heard from Pam Fessler, our reporter here covering this, that many states are pulling back from their commitment to voting machines. Many states are trying to find other ways to satisfy the demand for accurate, swift counting machines that do not raise this doubt among many voters that their vote is being accurately counted and preserved. Without a paper trail, many people are just never going to feel that they trust that machine and the people who programmed that machine and the people who manufactured it and all the repairmen in between.
And the hackers hanging around the outside the machine.
There's always going to be that doubt. Now, of course, our entire election system operates on some degree of trust. If we don't have trust in the folks that we meet when we get to the polling place to record our ballot accurately, this whole thing's going to break down. But the machines as the savior, the machines as the perfect solution, that's fading. Mm-hmm. And a lot of states are pulling back on it. We're probably going to see a new generation of machines generated that hopefully will give people more sense of faith.
There will be an older system in use in Iowa come this weekend when the Republican straw poll is in effect. Last weekend, Republicans faced off in a debate in Iowa, and here is Mitt Romney fighting back over a negative ad that has been broadcast in Iowa by conservative Sam Brownback, the senator from Kansas. And Brownback attacks Mitt Romney's position on abortion, and here Romney comes back at him.
Virtually every part of that ad is inaccurate. I'm pro-life. My positions are pro-life. The idea that, for instance, I've been in favor of taxpayer funding of abortion, that's wrong. I oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. In our state, we passed a medical plan that reduces the number of people who receive state funding for abortion. So the ad is just completely wrong.
George, if I could, you can go up on YouTube and see the governor himself
speaking source
about what he is, where he is on this position. And
in 1994, Sam,
the governor himself.
I was pro-choice. I am pro-life, and I'm tired of
a truthful position. Every piece of that is truthful.
Governor Romney,
YouTube, and look for the governor what he says himself.
Governor Romney,
you can go back to YouTube and look at what I said in 1994. I never said I was pro-choice, but my position was effectively pro-choice. I've said that time and time again. I changed my position.
And an excerpt from the Republican debate in Iowa. David Yepsen was at the debate as one of the moderators, along with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. He's a political columnist at the Des Moines Register and joins us now from a studio at member station WOI in Ames, Iowa. Nice to have you back on the program, David.
Good to be with you.
And we heard from a number of Republican candidates in that debate, of course. Did it seem to you that people were trying to distance themselves from the president?
A little bit. You could see that in sort of some of the comments in between the lines. I think that process is going on. They have to be careful about it. The president remains personally popular with a lot of Republican activists in Iowa. But you saw here and there that some distancing beginning.
Distancing, how I would be different from George W. Bush administration.
Right, and what they would do differently, what some nuances that they might do differently.
Mm-hmm. And as you listened to that debate, did you hear the tenor of the campaign taking on a new tone?
Well, I heard one of the subtexts of that debate was this straw poll in Iowa this weekend among activist Republicans, and you've got a real fight going on among some of the second-tier candidates for the hearts and minds of the social conservatives in the party. Social conservatives really haven't lit on one candidate. And so you have Mike Huckabee and Sam Brownback, Tom Tancredo, Tommy Thompson, sort of mixing it up a little bit to see who can capture those people. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the sort of the subtext that was going on that might not have been obvious to voters who watched that around the country, but was certainly part of the game here in this state.
And then there are the three who weren't there and aren't going to be participating in the straw poll, and each for their different reasons. Rudolph Giuliani, the front runner nationally in the opinion polls. Fred Thompson, who's not a declared candidate yet, though we're apparently debating dates in September when he was going to be announcing his nomination. And John McCain, whose campaign is in some disarray.
Well, I think Rudy Giuliani particularly might have been trying for some spontaneous combustion in this poll, saying he's staying away from the straw poll, which is accurate, but then he's just wrapping up a three-day trip through the state. So I think there might be some hope by the Giuliani people that there'll be some of their supporters who'll show up and he'll have a surprise finish in the straw poll. I'm not sure that'll happen, but I think that might be in the back of their minds.
Mm. We're talking on the Political Junkie segment with guest political junkie Ron Elving and with David Yepsen of the Des Moines Register. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And David, just tell us a little bit about what happens at a straw poll in Iowa.
Well, it's a combination carnival and election. They're outside a college coliseum in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State University. It's a very festive occasion. There's bands and free barbecue and tents. And for $35 a ticket, and if you're an Iowan and have got an Iowa driver's license, you can vote for one of the Republican presidential candidates. In the last three election cycles, the eventual nominee finishes in those top three finishers. And so all of a sudden, what is sort of a pay-to-vote kind of thing takes on some significance in a field that is as fluid as this one, as you mentioned. There's some, you know, Fred Thompson has yet to get in, and mm-hmm. You've got people who aren't participating. And so there is this fight to sort of finish among the top three so that some of these single-digit candidates can start to break out and start to get some media attention. I would imagine that we'll see one or two candidates who do not finish in those top three places drop out of the race as a result of that.
Hmm. Let's get a caller.
That's happened in the past.
Yes, that's sort of the track record of this. Let's get a caller on the line. This is Aaron. Aaron's calling us from Chicago.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I was actually at the debate last night, and I wanted to specifically ask your panelists what they felt the relevancy of a national poll is in light of the fact that regional polls in both Iowa and New Hampshire have put Barack Obama neck and neck with Hillary Clinton, if not leading, I believe, by a small margin in one of the polls.
Mm-hmm. David Yepsen, you're certainly the expert on Iowa.
That's true. The national polls do not mirror the polls that you see in Iowa and New Hampshire, and that is one of the reasons why these two early states have taken on probably an even more important role in this election. Everybody hates Iowa and New Hampshire. They think it's too much attention is paid to these states. All these other states have moved up their contest closer to Iowa and New Hampshire in an attempt to capture some of the limelight and have some influence. All that does is have the unintended consequence of making these two states all that much more important, and it means the candidates are pouring on the time, effort, money, staffs in this state. But your caller is absolutely correct. In Iowa, it is a statistical tie for first place between Clinton, Edwards, and Obama. So Edwards had been in the lead, but now it's a tied race.
Ron Elving, why do you say that Hillary Clinton's lead in the national polls is getting a little daunting for Barack Obama then?
Because of the way he's running his campaign. He has clearly decided that he cannot allow her to run away and hide from him on the national scene. Even though he is raising his profile in Iowa, has shown some success. In fact, some of his best polling in the country is, relatively speaking, in Iowa, because that's where he's been able to, at least in this one Washington Post ABC poll, pull even, slightly 1 point ahead, of Edwards and Clinton. That's really a testament to the effectiveness of his getting into a state and spending time there, as well as money. So that's the kind of thing that he does need to do if he wants to have that golden moment of breaking into her inevitability. He has to be competitive in Iowa. We can't let her run away from him in Iowa the way she is nationally.
Okay, good question. Thanks very much, Aaron.
Thank you.
And David Yepsen, Ron Elving made me aware of a report today in the Wall Street Journal that suggests that South Carolina is about to move up its primary as well. That will force New Hampshire to move up its primary, which could put Iowa, if it wants to be separate from all of these and ahead of everybody, into December. Is that what's likely to happen now?
Yes, we'll see you here at Christmas time.
Before Christmas time.
Before we see you at Thanksgiving.
We'll see you much later.
Well, this is it is getting a little bit ridiculous, but there is this leapfrogging that's going on. I think what will happen is in New Hampshire, the caucuses right now are scheduled for January the 14th, 2008. If New Hampshire moves up near that date, I think you'll see Iowa maybe move another week. So you may be looking at sometime in the first 7 days of January that the caucuses would be held. But it's possible that somebody will try to hold these things in December. I think if that happens, they'll be much discounted, and campaigns will probably use that as an opportunity to bail out. Because part of the cachet of these events has been that it is the first contest in the election year itself. And so I think they lose something if you move it out of the actual calendar year.
And it would have to move a lot, since it's been pointed out to us that both Christmas and New Year's are Tuesdays. So it would be mid-December. David Yepsen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
David Yepsen of the Des Moines Register, a political columnist. He joined us from member station WOI in Ames. Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor, our guest political junkie today. Ken Rudin will be back next week. Ron, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.